Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. In a moment, Tim Brando. But first, our play-by-play call of the day. Chris Bryant launches one for the Cubs.
A 2-2 from Delgado to Bryant. Fly ball deep right center field. That ball's got a chance. Gone to the swimming pool area in right center. Chris Bryant with a long home run to right center. His 12th of the year, his first home run since the 20th of July, and the Cubs now lead 5-0.
Obviously, at Chase Field in Arizona last night, words that Mel Allen never uttered when Mickey Mantle was at the plate. That's launched toward the swimming pool. Mel Allen never had to say that. When it comes to games that we watch, there are just certain individuals that the second I hear their voice, I think to myself, it's got to be a big game. Tim Brando's one of those guys. Tim, it is great to have you with us. It was great to see you Saturday.
Thanks, Steve. And trust me, as much as I appreciate that comment from you, were it not for guys like you and so many other iconic voices that cover the teams on a regular basis, we wouldn't be armed with nearly the information that we need. So thanks for being so hospitable throughout your entire career. I haven't had the chance to catch the Nittany Lions in football in quite some time, but you've always been wonderful, and I was just a sponge to your information packet when you came by to see me during the pregame the other day. It was great. I loved being back in Happy Valley. It's been a long time, and frankly, it's one of the really cool things about what I'm doing now at Fox, because of all my years at CBS, and we really being a carrier for the bulk of those years, just the SEC. We had the Big East before it broke up into two conferences with the American Athletic Conference. So we had that for a few years in the late 90s, early 2000s. But by and large, I've not really been outside the South too much during football season in the last 20-some years. So it's really great to be back out and visiting places like Michigan this week and Penn State, obviously, last week, and Iowa. I'd never been to Iowa in my career to call a football game. So it's cool, you know, especially at this stage of my life. It's really cool to experience firsts in broadcasting, because there aren't many of those left in my in my future. I've been to a lot of different spots. I think every state in the continental United States I've been to, but it's a blessing to get to do this at this time in my career.
Well, you know what, though? I mean, look, obviously you were terrific in the studio, so there's no and the fact you were hooked up with Spencer Tillman worked really well, but you were made to do play-by-play. You and I both know that. I mean, I could tell your juices flow because there's a game in front of you.
Yeah, listen, I had a wonderful run at CBS. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It ended rather abruptly, and really had nothing to do with my work in the studio or my play-by-play either. It had more to do with a radio show that was being simulcasted that was on CBS Sports Network for a period, and we just came to irreconcilable differences over the way that it ended. And honestly, for a period there, I didn't know what was going to happen with my career. I was a free agent for about 9 months, and I think there was a lot of anticipation that maybe I'd be going to the SEC network. That's never really what I wanted. Fox was really always what I wanted, because I knew they had games, they had inventory, and quite a bit of it. And they wanted to grow their college properties. They wanted to be a factor in college sports. And with that knowledge, I was very hopeful that it could work out, that I could wind up. At that time, Vern was still, you know, going at it, and I didn't see a finish line for him. I didn't. I thought he would probably continue doing it even, you know, through this year. And and as he should, because he's had a wonderful career, and you talk about iconic voices. Certainly he is one and someone I always looked up to. Well, with that in mind, I'm not getting any younger. You know, I'm 58 at that time, and I want to get back on that bike fast. They allowed me to do some SEC play-by-play in football when we had doubleheaders, and they would allow another guy to come in and host. But that wasn't enough for me. You know, I really wanted to get back out there. And I hear this from people all the time. Gosh, you sound so happy. You sound so energized. And the answer to that is I am. You know, I sound that way because I am. Because throughout my career, and it's been both a blessing and a curse, when you have made your name in so many respects as a studio host, it can work against you long term when you're chomping at the bit to get out to call college football games. And I just never did a full schedule of games, with the exception of my first year away from college game day back in '89, when Vince Dooley and I were paired together at ESPN. And that year, of course, we did Penn State, West Virginia at Happy Valley. And then we had Coach Paterno's team in the Holiday Bowl in that epic matchup with BYU.
Yes.
50-39, when Gary Brown literally stole the ball out of the hands of Ty Detmer, took it back the other way. That kid, he threw for a record number of yards in a single game. You could just tell Joe was, that was the most sickening championship bowl victory I think he's ever had, to see that much offense in one game. But that was the only year that I did football every week. And so that's a long time between 1989 and 2014 when I joined the Fox crew. So that's the reason for the energy and the happiness. I'm as excited now about what I do as I was when I was 29 years old and I started at ESPN in 1985. So it is like a rebirth, you know, and that's kind of what our industry is you do have to survive over time and occasionally reinvent yourself. And I think that's sort of what happened. It shocked a number of people when I left the SEC. I think a lot of people thought that's where I was going to be and that's where I wanted to stay. And the truth of the matter is I didn't. I wanted to break out and experience college football in other places. And with the Pac-12 and the Big 12 and now the Big 10, I'm certainly getting to do that at Fox.
Well, I know it's only one exposure, but you would obviously, you'd talk to the coaches, you looked at some video and so forth. What did you think of Penn State, and in particular, what did you think of Trace McSorley?
Well, I mean, I think I'm getting a lot of pushback from Oklahoma fans on Twitter because of my my digital leap and saying he's this year's Baker Mayfield. I think you may have seen that. The folks at Fox Digital asked me to do a commentary each week for about 60 seconds to talk about whatever you really want to talk about at the end of a game. And so being at Penn State for the first time in such a long period and then understanding where they are in the landscape of the Big Ten this year, fans have a way, especially after week one, of really putting too much stock in what they witness. And I think that was to the detriment of the image of Penn State after the game with App State. And those of us that have been around long enough know that Appalachian State's a pretty good team. They've got some history, right, just as Michigan. And there's a lot of newbies around around Trace McSorley. And when you've got that many new guys to replace, and especially the running back situation by committee behind Saquon, and now I think the feature back really does appear to be Miles Sanders, but all these other guys, Slade and Allen, are getting their time. Gesicki being gone, now you got to find the new tight end. You got really three of them. Only two played last week. I just loved what I saw. And now, granted, you know, that's not the toughest competition you're going to play. You'll have, I think, a more game opponent on the road at Illinois on Friday. But I think the timing of the scheduling here, and also the placement of teams, is right in Penn State's wheelhouse. Now, you know, you get Ohio State in a whiteout game with an extra day to prepare after you play Illinois, and I know if James is listening, he's throwing stuff at his radio right now, but because all his focus is on Illinois. But to me, you win that game, you will change by 180 degrees the national perception of where your program is. And I think even football insiders, people within the league, know that depth-wise, in terms of overall talent, no team is hardwired better to beat Ohio State at home than Penn State. You're just young. You're not as experienced as they are, but you're every bit as deep. Their first 22 are probably better than your first 22. But, you know, all things are negligible when you bring the home field involved and primetime and all that comes with that matchup. Trace right now is having to do more than he had to do a year ago. I think he is up to that. His stats, and this was most of the pushback, as you know, these loons on Twitter just look at numbers and stats. and he's had, I don't know how many drops. He had a ton the other day in the game we had, and he had even more in the game in the wet with Pitt at Heinz Field. So his stats don't really live up to where he is right now as a quarterback in college football. I think over time those stats will be more compelling. And if they are to get there, if they are to pull it off the way I think they can and become a college football playoff team, he clearly is going to be the reason why. So I love what I see. And defensively, I think, you know, with Gibbons back in the lineup and what you're getting off the edges from Los Matos and Sharif Miller, that's the strength of what you're doing right now. And the young linebackers are coming along nicely. I think that the Penn State future immediately is bright and long-term brighter.
One thing you can see in games such as these, no matter who the opponent is, you can see athleticism. Do you see a Penn State team that is competing athlete for athlete?
Yeah, I guess that's the point. You know, if you look at even if Wisconsin had won last week, and the fact that they lost was obviously bad for the Big Ten. It was a bad weekend for the Big Ten. Horrible. You know, Maryland losing to Temple, Wisconsin losing to BYU, Northwestern losing to the Fighting Terry Bowdens of Akron. God, if I just had that Nebraska-Akron game now to open the season, right? If we had just had that game instead of a touchback and then lightning and we didn't get to play the game. And Nebraska's two losses, by the way, are against pretty good teams without their quarterback and playing a walk-on out there. So, and by the way, I'll just give you a little scoop. I do think Martinez is going to go. They're saying it's a game-time decision, but I think Martinez will go at Michigan on Saturday, and that could be a hell of a game. And a lot
I agree, and I'm with you, Tim.
That.
Yeah, Jack Ham and I watched a little bit of the Colorado game with Martinez out there. He is a big difference maker for them.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, and he's got to carry that team right now. But but it was a bad week for the Big Ten. And but even if Wisconsin had won, and let's say Iowa continues to win, let's say they beat Wisconsin this week, okay? There are limitations to what these teams can do athletically, especially in trying to match up with Ohio State. That's not true with Penn State. You know, you got the same kind of dudes they got. The only difference is your dudes haven't played as much. So I think that's what makes me feel so positively that Penn State's in a really good position. I'm not saying it's a must win, but I say you can win that game. I don't know that I would say that in week five of the season about any other Big Ten team against Ohio State right now, other than Penn State. And this is goes back to just the job done from a recruiting standpoint in Pennsylvania, back to Northern Jersey. You know, you just have that look about what great Penn State teams in the past look like. And now you're even quicker because of the style of offense and the RPOs that have been installed by James and his able staff. I really think when I look at a guy like Ricky Ronnie's taken over for Moorhead, so much of what was good about what Moorhead did is still there, but Ronnie's got some of his own little, you know, being an old Cornell quarterback, he's got some, you know, little twists and turns of his own that he's instituted. And, you know, I think it's a refreshing offense to look at right now. And the deep shots, those early deep shots that they're willing to take, will be exactly what you have to do to loosen up the Buckeyes defensively. And look, Ohio State without a couple of turnovers late doesn't beat TCU. I don't know if you were watching that game as closely as I was, but talk about a bad week. Can you imagine if Ohio State had lost last week?
Oh. that had to send a search party out for Jim Delaney. So, you know, it's you talked about the joy of doing this, which is apparent. Anybody can hear that. How much it's the first time I had a chance to meet Spencer. So I had not met him until then, and you were kind enough to introduce me to him. Tim, what's it been like part of that joy, the fact you're working with him side by side?
Well, he's the best friend that I have in my life, as well as my profession. And it's not often in our business you're able to say that about somebody you work with. We've been together since 98 when he joined the studio at CBS after Craig James went to the NFL show and Lou Holtz took the South Carolina job. Spencer had been working, talk about investing in his career. He was from, still does live, his family in Sugar Land, Texas, right outside Houston. But to get his career started, he went to WABC in New York to anchor on weekends and was commuting back and forth between Houston and New York. And CBS hired him from there to join me at the studio. And he's just a remarkable guy. Great man of faith, compassionate. He has four daughters. I have two daughters. They're really good friends. They all met when we were together on Thanksgiving weekends during college football in the old days at CBS. And when I left in suddenly in 2014, Spencer just had a year left on his deal, and we were having a shakeup because Donovan McNabb was being replaced by Charles Davis from our college football. He'd been working with Gus. So Joel Klatt was going to move up and work with Gus, and I had just broken in Brady Quinn that first year. That was the first year Spencer and I had been away from one another. And so they were looking for another analyst, and I've been in this business, like I said, this is my 34th year on network television, and no one's ever asked me my opinion, Steve. You know how that goes. Right?
I know perform, how that goes, yep.
Management tells us, but this actually happened. Fox's suits came to me and they said, Tim, you have anybody in mind? Would you, if we said it, who would you like to have? And I said, well, I know this guy that I've been with at CBS for the last 16 years of my 18 there. I said, his contract's coming up. You might make a run at Spencer Tillman. Lo and behold, they did it. Now think about that. That just doesn't happen. And and it did. It did. And they reached out to him, and he came, and like me, he wanted out of the studio too. He desperately wanted to go out and do games. He does Houston Texans preseason games in Houston. So he keeps up with both the NFL and college, and it's wonderful. My oldest daughter Tiffany, who's 35, she would have been about 13 years old when she met Spencer, and fell in love with him, called him Uncle Spence, and she was so moved by her relationship with him. When she married, she and her husband named their son, who's now 15 months old, Spencer, after you know who. So, which brought him to tears. And I gave him a little bit of a hard time. I said, so there was never, Tim was never considered? I mean, you never even considered going with your dad? Which you'll hold over my head, you know, big time. But that's how close we are. I've only had one friend in our industry that I had a relationship with that was as close to mine with Spencer, and that was John Saunders, who unfortunately passed away a little over 2 years ago. My colleague and friend from ABC and ESPN. We started at ESPN the same week. In fact, we were on the same press release when I moved up to Connecticut to do SportsCenter and host College Game Day back in 86. I mean, Spencer's a guy that knows all my foibles. I know his. He's a friend that's so close that if there's an issue, whether it's with me or with someone else, he's going to give me the heads up, hey, man, you need to be more aware of this or that. You know, good friends will not only tell you how much they love you, but they'll prove it by telling you where you need to get in line. You know, we all have blind spots.
Right.
And it's that kind of friendship between the two of us. And so that means a lot. And makes the job really not a job. You know, I'm just looking to get together with my guys every week. All those guys you met in the booth are dear friends of mine, and we have a three-day football party each week. That's kind of the way we look at it.
Well, we could do this probably for the next like couple of hours here, because when we were in the booth on Saturday, we talked Sam Looklighter stories, Penn State, because we're two of the survivors of the Penn State-Indiana game.
Poor Barry Parkhill. Bruce Parkhill, Barry Parkhill. Every time I see Barry at Virginia talking about his brother, it's like, oh, my God.
I mean, we survived that. So that came up. We didn't quite get into the tornado at the Georgia Dome you got through. We didn't get to that part.
Trust me when I tell you, I am going to write a book as soon as I, finally make sure that I get the right guy to help me, because I have way too many run-on sentences to actually do it by myself. But once I do, that game definitely gets a portion of a chapter. You know, the Penn State Indiana game. Raft and I always talk about that, and the tornado. That's a chapter. You know, the 2008 SEC tournament, the Miracle Three between Alabama and Mississippi. There are several of them out there. Who knew? Last year, right out of the chute, I'm doing basketball at Fox. And we've got that outside the line story on Nasser at Michigan State going on, just as I'm about to do Izzo's team against Wisconsin. Now that's a chapter as well, let me tell you. There's an old story.
And Penn State was the next team in, right after Wisconsin.
That's right.
I was right behind you.
The old cowboy and my mentor as a broadcaster, Kurt Gowdy, who really helped me a lot along the way as I was coming up. And I named my little brother Kurt after Gowdy, and he knew that before he passed away. I remember Kurt saying to me, "Kid, remember when you call in live sports, they don't pay you for what you do; they pay you for what you might have to do." And,
that's right.
You know, that's so true. You know, when you're doing a live event, you can't control the elements; you don't know what's going to happen, and circumstances surrounding the game and the game's environment can change. We had Spencer and I, our first year together, had a game at Oklahoma State where some whacked out lady decided to drive a car and kill three people during a homecoming parade.
I remember.
And so Spencer and I had to get to the stadium. We had to walk over body bags. Now think about opening your show with a eulogy. I mean, with an obituary. The tone that you have to set when that goes on. You know, there's no manual on how you do that. You just have to do it. You know, you just have to find a way to do it. But again, Steve, that's one of the great things about what we do, are the experiences that we go through and how we handle them. And I tell young broadcasters all the time, that's the big key, is just be willing to adjust. Don't get too, you know, remember that no matter what you're thinking the game's about, sometimes things go on that are bigger than the game, and you got to be mindful of that.
Well, Tim, anytime I get to spend any time with you or talk with you, I consider it a privilege. So thanks so much, my friend, for just giving us a few minutes today. I really appreciated it.
Happy to do it. You guys have a good time Friday, and I hope that we can get back there. And as I said, I really believe in this team. I picked them to be in the playoff. I told Franklin this, by the way. I mean, he knows. So, you know what his response was, by the way? You know what James said to me after I told him? He said, "My focus is on Illinois." My focus is on Illinois.
Illinois.
Gee, that wasn't a predictable response. Thanks, James.
Oh, God.
You take
Thanks,
care,
Timmy.
Steve.
Good luck with the next one. I look forward to seeing you soon, I hope.
You got it, buddy. Anytime.
Tim Brando, he is one of the all-time best, in my opinion. I mean, I listened to a lot of play-by-play for years. As I opened up and said, whenever I hear Tim's voice, I feel like no matter what the game is, that must be a big game of some sort. That's kind of guy he is. Appreciate him a lot. All right, bottom of the hour. Time now for a news update. We'll have that in just a few moments. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Have we ever had a good time today and a lot of really great discussion. Wow. Great calls, Tim Brando. It's been fun today. Now, if you're wondering how we're going to handle high school football on Friday night, it'll be the usual. Sealands Grove will be on Eagle 107. Lewisburg is going to be on 100.9 The Valley. And yes, Shikellamy will be on WKOK. Then when the game with Shikellamy and Jersey Shore is over, they'll transition to us in Champaign, and we'll pick it up from there with Penn State and Illinois. Obviously, it's an unusual situation. And that's the way we decided to handle it, and I think that was the right way to handle it. So, good. And that's what we're going to do. Now, the Phillies, I don't know. I think they're, you get the sense they're almost to the end, don't you?
That's for sure. You know, the boat's taking on a little more water trying to keep up, but Aaron Nola... back on the bump tonight, Aaron Nola and Steve Matz tonight.
Well, Nola, you know how much I like him. Yeah. I think Nola's a special talent right there. Wow. If that's what this is where, for example, when you're not going well, you have to be able to turn to a guy that can go out and give you seven innings and put a stop to it. All right, and that's what I think Aaron Nola is capable of doing. That's why I think Aaron Nola is a one. Dick brought up about the calls in the NFL on quarterbacks, and I understand exactly where Dick's coming from, because you can take these rules interpretations and you can go too far with it. I mean, way too far with it. And the Clay Matthews play... actually, I think it was the definition of what they're trying to do in the Green Bay-Minnesota game. But there have been some others where I don't think they quite know how to rule it or why they're ruling it. Right? That's to me, the issue that they have in this league. Now, I still say the number one reason, they can talk all they want about concussions, liability, and so forth. But I also think the number one reason for them is that they want to make sure when you get to December, you are still seeing the top guys playing quarterback in this league. I think that has a lot to do with it. That they are sick and tired of watching backup guys that nobody's heard of. Because I think they feel that just hurts the overall perception of the product. Now, Carson Wentz, for example, gets now, and it's funny because we're coming off of a season where a backup quarterback won the Super Bowl. That's the interesting part. We have a backup quarterback that won the Super Bowl last year. Now, a guy at least that had been to the Pro Bowl before, but he still was a backup quarterback. Now, Carson Wentz returns this week, and you notice it did not take long for the Eagles, with all due respect to Nick Foles, to put and install Carson Wentz as the starter the second that he was cleared by the medical team. So that's the Eagles, who are coming off a performance where he sat back and went, really? What was that? Now, on the other side of the state, the team that just beat the Eagles, the Tampa Bay Bucks, will be taking on the Steelers on Monday Night Football. Your team's a mess.
It is. Secondary, not all that great. And now we're going to be dealing with a quarterback in Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's enjoying a renaissance. I mean, who would have thought that this guy was going to fill in 2-3 games for Jameis Winston? And boy, he's just setting the world on fire.
Okay. Let's look at the history of Ryan Fitzpatrick. With all due respect, you will notice that Ryan Fitzpatrick in the month of September, when he is in these spots, always seems to get off to great starts. Cincinnati, Buffalo, the Jets, wherever he may be, he seems to get off to great starts. Not good, great starts. Then October comes around, and teams adjust. And suddenly, he's got a problem. Now, it's the problem the Steelers have is it's still September. He's still in his comfort zone. And the Steelers' secondary is just... I mean, Artie Burns. I mean, I know I pick on Artie Burns all the time. But Artie Burns is, to me, the consummate combine guy. Wow, look at Artie run. Wow, look at Artie jump. And then all of a sudden you draft him and you say, wow, look at Artie play football.
Oh, there's at least two plays last Sunday at Heinz Field where he got burned, where he wasn't even one Kansas City touchdown where he just got blown right past him. I mean, it may be early. It may be early to say the Steelers are in trouble, but they got to get things turned around really quick.
Well, they're all 1-1. They haven't won a game.
Yeah, they got to get things moving. Right now, they're even with Cleveland.
Well, I told you the joke I told Tom Bradley, right? I told you that, didn't I?
Yes, about Artie. Yeah.
I said, when he got the job, I called him up and I said, hey, Scrap, this is great. I said, but I got good news and bad news for you. He goes, what do you want? He goes, you typical him, I'll take the bad news. I said, no, I'll start with the good news. He goes, all right, fine, what's the good news? I said, you're coaching in the NFL. He goes, yeah. I see. He goes, well, what's the bad news? I said, you're coaching Artie Burns. That drew no response on the other end.
Tomlin's one of the most longest tenured head coaches now in the NFL. Well over a decade, hard to believe already. Time flies, but this has to be his biggest challenge to date as head coach at this point.
No question, because he has got a team that has talent in some areas. Okay, other areas he doesn't. Okay, I don't consider athletes talent. I consider athletes that are football players talent. Well, Artie Burns is he's an athlete. He doesn't know how to play football, though. And so you've got that, but you've got a bickering football team. You got a team that's not tight. You got a lot of guys on this team, not a lot. You got a couple guys on this team where they give you the impression they're above the fray. They're above the rest of the group. They're in a different class. You can't have a football team that has a class structure. You can't have that. And they act like they do. Antonio Brown acts like he's in a different class. Le'Veon Bell definitely acts like he's in a different class.
Well, there's only so many times when Ben can bail you out, when he has those impromptu moves out there in the field where it kind of turns into a sandlot kind of game. I mean, sooner or later, those plays are going to be gone. And it just makes you wonder how much Ben has left in the tank.
Well, he made a couple plays on Sunday where it was vintage Ben.
Yeah.
Where he was under pressure, held the ball way, bought himself a little bit of time. Offensive line, I thought, protected him really well. And then he found somebody. And some quarterbacks would have gotten rid of it right away. You know, they got Brown. They got Juju Smith-Schuster. I mean, Connor's been good at running back. I mean, he's not Le'Veon Bell, but he's been good. But they do have to play a different way without Bell. I don't care what anybody says. You have to play a different way when you don't have the guy of that kind of versatility there. Connor can do so. Connor does basic things in the pass game. Basic things. And he does what most running backs do in the pass game. You know, guys like Bell, guys like Saquon Barkley, they run routes out of the backfield. Most other guys play it like Zeke Elliott and like Connor, and they kind of float out, and they're like a safety valve guy. So the Steelers have to play a different way. And they have to play it in such a way where they're not putting a defense in peril with the running back in the pass game. Everybody knows how to defend that kind of pass play with that kind of running back. And again, that's not a put down to James Conner. That's just who he is. Bell is exceptional when it comes to the pass game. And you're talking about, you're comparing him to an exceptional guy. And I realize that they franchised him and so forth. But, you know, Bell's putting himself above what's going on with the team. Antonio Brown acted on Sunday as if he was putting himself above the team. And now you probably have some people looking around at the team going, excuse me, I'm getting kind of sick of this. Stop the soap opera. Let's play some football here. We're good enough to get to the Super Bowl. Well, if you lose this week and you're 0-2-1, you are not going to the Super Bowl. You are not winning your division. That means you have no wins in 3 weeks. I mean, just think about that. You have no wins in 3 weeks if they don't win this week.
Well, you go back to 2013. 2013, they started, did they start, was it 0-4? I believe it was 0-4 back in 2013. They ended up finishing the season 8-8. I mean, let's face it, this year, no way anyone was saying that this team was going to finish 8-8 this year. Although the suit predicted 9-7 back in January. He did say that.
Yeah, but he
but that is way,
always
but
going
that is,
nine, is it?
Yeah, that's
but
true.
He always thinks that, okay? He always thinks it's going to be awful. He still thinks that Jerome Bettis can run. I mean, he still thinks that Troy Polamalu could unretire and help them. And he thinks without them, they're not better than the slightly better than 500. He always thinks they're 9-7. It's hard working around somebody that's so incredibly depressed all the time.
Oh, I know. Well, look at other things that Tomlin had to deal with. I mean, Ben had the 4-game suspension back in 2010. I mean, the year before they started 0-4 in 2013, they lost 4 of their last 5 to get to 500 back in 2012. So, I mean, you put all those factors in, this just feels much more of a bigger challenge for Tomlin.
Yeah, no question. All right, we'll take a break. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
News Radio 1070 WKOK. We are Penn State.
One deep down the middle, reaching out. Got it. Touchdown. Penn State. Brandon Polk. Trace McSorley's hit all the big plays today. 41 yards and another Nittany Lion touchdown.
Friday night, the Nittany Lions play the conference opener at Illinois. Kickoff is at 9.
Penn State Nittany Lions football on WKOK is sponsored in part by Zimmerman Motors and Turbotville National Bank.
Thousand voices in the stadium, and the bandwagon jumper has to get in there at the end.
Making his presence felt.
I thought he was putting out fires.
Well, that was yesterday.
That was yesterday.
That was so yesterday. No.
So yesterday, what were we doing today?
Guess this other stuff.
That's what I said to Jamie. I said, I admire you a lot, Jamie. I said, well, she said, why is that? I said, he's your problem now. He's your Artie Burns. She goes, Artie Burns, and look him up. So he's your Artie Burns.
Her reply like to that would probably be, yeah, I did. Her reply would probably be, wait, he doesn't play for Penn State? What?
It's your Artie Burns, Jamie. Just look him up. Back, you know what his nickname is? Toast. He gets burned every time.
He did.
That's your guy.
Oh, no.
That's your guy.
No.
Remember when Sean Davis was drafted? I told you how much I really liked the draft of Sean Davis.
That's right.
It was also the same draft where I said, I don't really like Artie Burns.
That's true. That's true.
It's like I told you when the Redskins. Now, remember Roger asked me about Kirk Cousins and I told him how much I liked that pick?
Yeah.
Now, obviously, he's at Minnesota, but I liked that pick. And it had nothing to do with RG3. My problem with RG3 is I was worried about durability. He is not a big guy.
Speaking of the Redskins, what about all those empty seats at that game against the Colts on Sunday?
But there are empty seats everywhere in this league.
Yeah, but it's huge. That was huge in D.C. They kept beating their chest for years and years, sellout after sellout. And, well, there's a lot of discord between the fan base and Dan Snyder and how that team is run these days.
Oh, I know.
Ugh.
And they won their opener and looked good doing it.
Yeah.
They won their opener and looked good doing it.
Same with Alex Smith, looked good, too.
But I'm saying, but that was the opener. And then they played the Colts. Nobody showed up.
Yeah.
That's a big problem. That's a big problem. And you can't have ownership that just flat out turns people off. You can have that.
It's just so huge with the population spread out down there in the corridor, in the Mid-Atlantic corridor, just with where the stadium too is physically located. It's a lot of extra travel compared to those, you know, days of the old RFK Stadium era.
Well, that's where the old Capitol Center used to be, on that spot where the old Bullets and Caps used to play. That's the exact site. So they built the stadium there. I mean, in terms of getting in and out, it actually is pretty easy because obviously I did a game down there. But, wow. If you were to tell me the Washington Redskins would have trouble filling seats in my lifetime, I'd have told you, no way. No way. All right. Tomorrow, our high school roundtable. Well, it's going to be great to hear from Greg Wetzel and Josh Showers and Lay Suit.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.